It's pick-click give time for Alaskans. When you file for the Alaska Permanent Fund dividend, you can support your favorite nonprofit organizations. Do you value public radio? Donations help KDLL provide the news, features, and entertainment programming you trust from around the world and right here at home. Apply for your dividend at pfd.alaska.gov by March 31st and pick-click give to help your favorite organizations. Thanks. Listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. I'm Jenny Nyman. It is 10 a.m. on Wednesday, so that means it's time for the Kenai Conversation. Today's conversation is on the Me Too movement on the Kenai Peninsula, raising awareness of sexual harassment and assault. The Me Too movement took off in social media in October 2017 in the wake of allegations against Harvey Weinstein in the entertainment industry. Women were encouraged to post or tweet Me Too if they'd been victims of sexual assault or harassment as a way to demonstrate the magnitude of the problem. And they did. The hashtag MeToo has since been tweeted and posted millions upon millions of times. The discussion caught fire nationally, in Alaska, and here in Kenai Soldotna. On January 9th, the Many Voices organization held a MeToo gathering and panel discussion in Soldotna. And today, we have three women who were involved in that event. In the studio, we have Susan Smalley, who is a community volunteer. Thanks for being here, Susie.
Glad to be here.
We have Dr. Kristen Mitchell, an internal medicine doctor in Soldotna. Thanks for being here, Kristen.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
And we have Dr. Pam Hayes, a clinical psychologist in private practice in Soldotna. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Susan, you can talk, although you are not a board member necessarily, of Many Voices. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the organization and how it's got started and what it's doing in this realm?
It was born in January of 2017, and I'm not a board member because we don't really have a board. We're a pretty fluid group. We have a steering committee, and it was born and it's working to make our community better. We noticed that there were people who needed ways to respond to violence, to the environmental issues, to things like that. And the Women's March was the time when we began. And our time and our focus has always been on what we can do that's positive. And so that's been our focus. We did the march. We were hoping 30 people would come, and 325 people came. And it was obvious that people were looking for ways to be active in the community and to make our community a better community. So we sponsored meetings about immigration, about voter registration. We're looking to help candidates get elected, more women, for one thing, to be involved in the political process. We've done book studies. We've done marches at the park. We did a 3 or 4 walks in the Soldotna Park on Wednesdays related to, it began with when Heather Meyer was killed in Charlottesville by the white supremacist. And so we did a positive for justice, anti-racism walk. And ultimately, our final hurrah after walking 3 weeks in the rain was to raise money for the food bank in Houston, Texas, after the hurricane. And we raised $2,400 in about 24 hours and sent that down. So there's a lot of passionate people and who kind of look around, and if somebody's interested in doing something, then we pursue that. And when Me Too came up, it seemed like a really obvious connection for us, so that we could provide under our umbrella a safe space for women and men and children who want to talk about sexual harassment and those kinds of things in the workplace and in our community, in the schools, and everywhere.
Okay, so kind of social activism in general, giving some sort of framework for people to pursue that locally. And then with the Me Too movement, tell me about the meeting, the forum, the panel discussion that you folks had.
And I actually would like to add on to what you had shared about Me Too, because the Me Too movement goes back a long ways beyond that.
Oh, definitely.
It was started over 10 years ago by a Black activist, Tarana Burke. And the story of how it began is really what prompted us to take this forward. After an all-girl bonding session at a camp, one young girl asked Tarana Burke if she could speak with her privately, and she describes the event as the following. For the next several minutes, this child struggled to tell me about her stepdaddy, or rather her mother's boyfriend, who was doing all sorts of monstrous things to her developing body. I was horrified by her words. The emotions welling inside of me ran the gamut, and I listened until I literally could not take it anymore, which turned out to be less than 5 minutes. Then right in the middle of her sharing her pain with me, I cut her off and immediately directed her to another female counselor who could help her better. The look on the girl's face was something that Burke would never forget and would go on to haunt her. And at the end, she talks about what she really should have said to the girl was a slight whisper and say, "Me too." But instead, she made her go on to someone else, and the girl closed up and probably never shared her story. So we want to, we wanted to interact with those people. And so we gathered up this great panel, and two of them are here today. And we also had two female pastors from the area, and also Stacy Lorien from the Kenites, who works with domestic violence persons.
Kristen, what made you decide to come be involved in the panel?
So I think this really has been an energy that's been building over time. And for many of us, I think the Harvey Weinstein revelations were a trigger to personal memories that we've carried with us and maybe haven't shared. And when Time Magazine had the Silence Breakers as their Person of the Year, I think that for me personally and for a lot of other people, that really brought to the fore how powerful it can be to break the silence. And so I wanted to be part of a group that it gave people an opportunity to be present and break the silence if that was the appropriate thing for them. And I have spoken with people since the panel who have told their story for the first time, really spurred by the local Me Too movement. And I think it's hard to understate how powerful that can be for someone to let a really damaging secret out and own that publicly, and to have people actually listen and acknowledge that that may be part of somebody's history, but it's not the whole of who they are. And so that, from a personal and from a clinical perspective, that's how I got involved in the Me Too movement here.
Okay. And Pam, what made you decide to come be on the panel?
Well, in my clinical practice, I work with people that have experienced abuse, and I see the pain that they experience. The suffering is really, really terrible that people go through when they've been sexually assaulted, particularly I see women who have been sexually abused, sometimes from the time they were in kindergarten, which it just defies imagination that people can be that cruel. But these kinds of experiences that people have gone through, and I say people because men are sexually assaulted too, and children, boys too, but these kind of experiences are so hard on people, and I see that. And one of the things I would like people to be aware of or thinking about is the shame that seems to be attached to these experiences, as if the person who's been abused is somehow to blame. And that's a message that people who have been abused often experience. It's often a message that they get from the perpetrator and carry with them, that which then contributes to feeling like they have to keep it secret and can't tell anybody, and maybe I'm different and something's wrong with me. So I just want to be one of those people who adds to the supportive voices for individuals who have gone through these kind of experiences.
How did the discussion go? What did you get a good turnout? Did you get good response?
Well, it was interesting because we wanted the right people to be there, but we also didn't want to make it a public event because we weren't looking for people who were curious or voyeuristic. So we had about 30 people there, and you could feel the safety in the room. It was a safe place, and the people who were there, I think, will be very helpful to others in their lives because, you know, we didn't take a poll of who had been or who hadn't been, but we know that everybody there knows someone. And so part of it is providing what Pam and Kristen were talking about, a place where people can feel safe and can feel not shamed and actually have someone listen to them, not to solve their problem, but just to acknowledge that that this happens. And I was sharing earlier, there was a friend who's about in her 70s. She said, well, nothing like this has ever happened to me in my life. And I said, I think that's wonderful. She said, well, there was that time when a guy came up to me on the street and grabbed my breast. But, you know, just defining that our bodies are our safe spaces, whether we're women, we're men, we're boys, we're girls, and to have that be out there for people to talk about so that it doesn't seem like these things that have happened to you are ugly and dirty, that it wasn't right that it happened, but there are people who care and there are ways that to share and ways to get help and feel like you can put it back together if that's necessary.
I think, Pam, you were talking about some of the reason why it's important to have these discussions and to have these forums where people can get involved and to have this be part of the culture. Alaska in particular, unfortunately, is a place where this sort of thing statistically happens more than other places in the country.
It is. Alaska has 2.5 times the rate of rape. And I just looked up the stats for the child sexual assault, 6 times the national average.
And the national average isn't great to begin with.
Yeah.
So what is the effect? I mean, obviously, if there's been some kind of assault, there's effects from that that can be physical, that can be psychological. I'm sure the two doctors here have seen that in their practices. So there's that element of it, and then there is the element of impacts from not having a place to voice that. Is that something that you come across too? Is that a sort of trauma in and of itself to have something happen and then not be able to address it or get treatment or get support for it in some sort of way?
Oh, I think that's very common. I mean, for one thing, I'll talk about abuse, like child abuse. Abuse happens in settings where, you know, it's kept secret, and there's often a system around the child that keeps it secret. The perpetrator will tell the child, you know, I'll kill your parent if you tell anybody, or scare them so they're terrified to tell anybody. And then just the awfulness of what's being done. It's often hard for people that have never experienced something like this to believe that anybody could do these things. So if a child does report something, a reaction may be something like, oh, that can't be. Did you dream that? Or you must have made that up. Or why are you telling lies? You know, so sometimes a child will report and they won't be believed. And same with adults too, that in society, it's just, we don't want to believe that these horrible things happen, but they do.
Yeah. Dr. Mitchell, have you seen things along those lines?
So it's difficult to have precise statistics, but there's certainly a lot in medicine where people may have unexplained chronic pain, chronic pelvic pain, chronic abdominal pain, chronic headaches, and sometimes there's not a clear physical explanation for the symptoms that somebody experiences. And I think quite often if we delve into somebody's past history, there may be a history of violence or abuse that contributes to their physical symptoms. So I think it's a much more common phenomenon, I think, than is often recognized.
Okay. And how do you see this moment that we're having now, this Me Too movement and so much attention in the culture? How do you see that helping, addressing those issues?
So again, I think it's hard to study in a systematic scientific way, but I hear stories regularly from patients that I care for that they may have had some internal trauma that they've kept bottled up for a long time. And once they're able to acknowledge what they were struggling with and move forward, that their physical symptoms frequently improve dramatically. And so I think the internal struggles and the emotional turmoil often manifest themselves physically. And if people are able to work through that emotional pain, the physical pain often will abate.
Can I add something here too?
Of course.
I think there's something about just knowing that one is not alone, you know, that you're not the only one. So if you're carting around this belief that, oh, this hasn't happened to anyone else, it kind of feeds this idea that something's wrong with me. And just to know that there are other people that you respect and care about who have been through similar things, and also that they've been okay and survived and moved on, that can be encouraging.
So is that one of the goals, Susie, of the Many Voices organization and in having these events?
Yes, it is. And actually, I'd like to share something that I wrote related to Me Too, and because it's kind of defining what they're talking about. I wrote an article for the Clarion, and it was inspired by other people saying things. And so I'm just going to read a couple lines of it. This is my own story. I was 10 years old. He was a middle-aged family friend. The year was 1958. I told no one. I was 16 years old. He was a classmate. The year was 1964. I told no one. Assaulted, violated. Even now, five decades later, naming and defining these incidents has not gotten any easier. I can never know if they changed my life significantly, but I do know I have carried them deep in my heart, privately sorting through the details from time to time, feeling it was my dirty little secret forever, never to be revealed. The Me Too movement has emboldened me after 59 years to shine a light into these dark moments of my life. It's given me the courage to share with my husband of 49 years, and now publicly, what I had never shared with anyone before. So what Pam is saying, I don't think it's been a huge burden for me, but it's always been there. And I couldn't even define it until other women and men started talking about it. So it's a powerful thing to know that you're not alone, and to know that people have healed, have taken care of it, and also to know that I can listen. A lot of people have shared stories with me, and they're not my stories to share, but it's just amazing because, unfortunately, I would guess the vast majority of women and girls, if they look through it, have a story to share.
Well, thank you for sharing yours. We have Susan Smalley in the studio today. She is a community volunteer involved in the Many Voices organization. We also have Dr. Kristen Mitchell, who is an internal medicine doctor in Soldotna, and Dr. Pam Hayes, clinical psychologist in private practice in Soldotna. And we're speaking of the Me Too movement in general, the Many Voices organization in particular, which has stepped into the middle of this in a way, in terms of holding meetings and forming a group kind of around giving people a space to be involved in this movement locally. Do you have more things planned in the future? Are there going to be more events like the forum?
Yes, we have one one event planned, which is a Green Dot event. And for people who aren't familiar with a Green Dot, it's a way of providing ways to respond to things that are happening in your life that may be little, may be big, it may be bullying, it may be people saying things that are inappropriate, ways to respond. It's a training so that people feel comfortable at their own level, at their own place, at their own age, to respond to violence in any form, in any how big or how small, in a way that changes the setting. It can be distracting. Like if somebody's having a fight out in the KDLL parking lot, we could call 911, or if they're right by my car, I could push the alarm button on my car and the alarm would start ringing. So it's really practical ways to respond and just giving people tools, because a lot of people have gone through a lot of life without knowing how to respond. They want to respond. I mean, they know they should respond, but it's just like with the stories for Me Too, how do you respond? What is the best way to respond to people who want to share their stories, or people who aren't ready to share their stories, or for people who have a really negative response to anybody doing anything about Me Too.
And what is your response to that? What would you counsel those people?
The ones with the negative responses?
Or for someone who feels like they want to share their story and aren't sure how, where, how could they do that? And then, as you say, folks with the negative response, I think that's probably one of the more stressful situations to find yourself in.
Well, one of the things that evolved in Many Voices is someone made the safety pins that were a kind of a popular thing for a while. And you wear the safety pin, and that way that if Pam has something going on and she needs to share something or there's something important, that safety pin was a reminder that you can talk to me. And it's a safe space. I will create that safe space. So we're also trying to do resources on our Many Voices Facebook site. We have resources where people can go, and we're going to add to that. And we're working through the possibilities and of a Me Too Facebook site. And we want to make sure that people who want and need to be there can be there, but it needs to be more private. So we're in the process of doing that right now, too, because we know there are other resources out there. I mean, these women sitting beside me know other resources, and we were raising questions about what about legal, what about. So mm-hmm. It's a way, and that's what Many Voices is. It's pooling all these people, and I think probably 400 or 500 people have been involved during this 1 year period. 525,600 minutes to draw out the resources, because they're amazing people and passionate people. And sometimes I don't know what they know. So we need to pool them and work at it that way.
Well, Kristen, Pam, what are some of the resources?
So I just wanted to respond a little bit. Many people have asked me, so how do I be an ally in this? I don't really think I'm part of the problem, but if I want to be part of the solution, how can I help? And I think there's not one answer, but I think it really starts by being an active listener and being willing to take the time to listen to someone's story if they're ready to share a story. And as uncomfortable as it can be to bear witness to something painful, it's that much harder to be brave enough to share that story. So I think knowing that we can't fix the abuse that happened in someone's past. We can't undo the violence that someone's experienced. We can listen and we can validate that what happened to that person is real for them. And that is, it's a tremendously powerful gift to give somebody. So I would just say, be ready to listen to people in your life who might have a story. And I think we've talked a lot about abuse. The Me Too movement incorporates an idea about harassment as well. And so there's certainly a spectrum of issues that people experience and that the Me Too movement has tried to address. And I think one way that as a society we need to think about moving forward is really changing our culture person by person, step by step, to change our expectations about what we expect in society and how much violence and discrimination is acceptable. And so I think for all of us to look at our daily lives and daily interactions and to be willing to take a little bit of a risk and call something out if something that's, you just get this feeling, this really isn't okay, this isn't right, to stand up for that and to take a stand even if you're not the person on the receiving end of the discrimination, to try and be outside of your comfort zone a little bit and stand up for the person who might be.
Okay. And Pam, what about you?
So on an individual level, I'd just emphasize again Kristen's point about being a good listener. And a common response I hear people tell me when they disclose to someone else is that the other person asks questions that the person sharing can interpret as questioning the validity of what they're saying. So when you are listening, avoid questions like, well, are you sure that they meant that? Or do you think you could have been overly sensitive? Or anything, a question that implies that what they're saying is not completely valid. Just listen and accept what the individual's saying. So that's on an individual level. And then there are also community resources. I don't have a specific list of these, but if a person wants to go for counseling, there's Denina Wellness Center, which has a number of counselors and a psychologist there who you could get an appointment with, or Peninsula Community Health Services is another place, Cottonwood Behavioral Health. There's also Child Advocacy Center in Kenai. I believe there's an Alaska Legal Services that's a statewide program where you can call in and get free legal advice. So there are a number of community resources like that that can be helpful.
Okay.
And I would just add, in an emergency or a crisis situation, 911 is available if somebody is in the midst of an assault. The hospital has rape crisis trained staff, and so if something has recently happened and someone needs to have an examination to check and see if they're safe to consider whether they might be interested in pursuing legal action in the future, that staff is available at the hospital. And the Lee Shore Center is in Kenai, and that's a resource if there are people who are in a domestic violence situation not feeling safe. That's a resource for women and women with children and transgender women as well to have a safe place to be if their home situation is not safe.
Okay. And so, Pam, one of the things you just mentioned there is if you are hearing a story from someone, if you're listening to someone who's struggling with these issues, to be careful to not question the person who is reporting it, to not cast doubt or make them feel like they're not being believed. That has been a hashtag in and of itself in this movement, is the believe her hashtag, and just kind of raising awareness about, I think, one of the reasons women haven't come forward in the past is the fear of not being believed. In another hat that I wear in a journalism background, of course, if you are reporting on any sort of criminal activity, there is the magic word alleged. We are very careful, of course, that in this country people are presumed innocent until proven guilty. And to me, as a reporter, that can be difficult. You know, if I'm interviewing someone and they mention a workplace in particular or a person by name, if I'm then going to report on that, of course, those behaviors, that harassment is alleged, the potential crimes are alleged. How do you wrestle with those two things? Or maybe, Susan, as part of an organization that's holding public meetings where you are encouraging people to share, is that something that is a concern at all? Or is that a kind of a difficult point in this, giving women the safe space to share and making them feel that they are being heard and believed? And then also, there is the witch hunt backlash element of this that is now coming about, too. So how do you navigate those two things?
Well, we've been really fortunate, and this, your question has actually probably something that we need to start, working with as a steering committee, because we've been really fortunate. In the safe space that has been created, people have not said or done anything that would go down that rabbit trail that you're talking about. But it is something we need to be aware of, because we want to allow people to speak. And I think a lot of what the listening process and everything, without those questions asked, you're more likely to just elicit people's deep, heartfelt experiences, and not so much like people asking questions, where did it happen, when did it happen, what were you wearing, all those kinds of questions. But I do believe it's something that's worth our pursuing, to make sure that we don't put anybody in a difficult set of circumstances or experience legal difficulties for us either.
Okay. Kristen, we were talking a little earlier about this question in particular, and you were saying that you kind of feel like this movement is a pendulum and we're still swinging and we're not quite sure where we're ending up yet.
And I think it is, this may be a real moment of cultural shift. Time will tell how much change there happens in this. I think as a clinical person, I really draw a distinction between the legal side of things, which is more about determination of guilt versus innocence and punishment, and the clinical side of things, which is really about healing trauma and helping people process what they've experienced and what's happened to them. And I think as a clinician, whatever someone discloses to me that happened to them is true for them, and validating that experience and helping them work through that on an emotional and physical level that's really where my professional and personal obligation lies. And I think as a society, we are defining what's legal, what's not legal, and those things have shifted over time in terms of what we accept as behaviors and what we don't. And marital rape, for example, it was not considered to be a legal entity in the past, it is now, and whether someone who works in the sex industry can be raped or not has changed over time. And so I think it's really not the job of the Me Too movement or of a supporter to decide someone's guilt or innocence. That's really a broader legislative and legal question. So I think there is, with the advent of social media and where people are outed and allegations are put out there, and there's maybe not the kind of investigation and substantiation that we would want in journalism, I think as a society we'll have to come to terms with how do we handle that kind of disclosure. I don't think we have all the answers to that yet.
Okay. And Pam, what about you? Do you have thoughts on that issue?
Well, I'm in a similar role to Kristen's in that I hear these stories in the context, in a very private context in my practice where, you know, it's completely confidential. So I believe people when they tell me. And I see it as my role to believe, validate. And another big piece of this is to emphasize that the individual telling me their story is not to blame for whatever's happened. That message of blame just seeps into people, and I want people to know that there is nothing that you can do that justifies abuse.
And that is Dr. Pam Hayes, clinical psychologist in private practice in Soldotna. We also have Kristen Mitchell, an internal medicine doctor in Soldotna, and Susan Smalley with the Many Voices Community Group as guests on the Kenai Conversation today, talking about the Me Too movement. It's about at the bottom of the hour, so it's time for a quick coffee, tea, beverage refill break. Please stay tuned, and we'll jump back into the conversation in just a few minutes.
Everybody's got a story. We want to share those stories and keep you in the loop. Tune in to the KDLL Evening News weekdays at 5:20 to hear stories about your community, your neighbors, and to get the latest news to help you make informed decisions. The KDLL Evening News with me, Shaylin Cochran, weekdays at 5:20 right here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna, public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula.
We all know the oil field and salmon make the Central Kenai Peninsula go round, but what else is there? Coffee stands, healthcare, baseball, and look, coming up quick on the outside, it's cannabis. On our new weekly report, Econ 91.9, we'll talk to the people who keep the Kenai humming. Tune in to the 5-Minute Report every Friday at 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. here on KDLL 91.9 FM.
And we are back. This is the Kenai Conversation on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna, listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. I'm Jenny Nyman, here with Susan Smalley, a community volunteer helping with the Many Voices organization, Dr. Kristen Mitchell, who practices internal medicine in Soldotna, and Dr. Pam Hayes, a clinical psychologist in private practice in Soldotna. The topic today is the Me Too movement, which is raising awareness of sexual assault and harassment. The Many Voices group held a Me Too gathering and panel discussion January 9th in Soldotna, in which our guests today participated. When we left off for the break, Dr. Hayes, you were talking about the message of blame that victims can have in these situations.
That message of blame, I think, is, as you point out, one of the stumbling blocks to people being more vocal about this. What are some of the others? Why do you think this movement has taken off and hasn't before? What have been some of the impediments, you know, socially or in any particular workplace realm or a family structure realm that have stopped people from standing up and being more vocal about this in the past?
Well, I think a big impetus is our president, this person who's been elected president, and the things he said about women and has done to women that were made very public. And there's been reaction to that, thankfully.
Anyone else?
Well, maybe because the platform has been provided, the words have been provided, and I don't mean in a fill in the blank Mad Libs kind of thing. But when I had my own experiences, I didn't even have words. If I had wanted to tell somebody, I don't know what I would have told them. And it's a, in some ways it's a healthier time. This mom of this daughter who has three sisters, she told me when she was sharing her story with me, and she told me that her mother, that first thing she told them, she said, I think I was just walking, and she told them, your body belongs to you. It's your safe space, and no one has a right to approach you in any way that's uncomfortable. And in that whole platform was provided, and I think those conversations are happening more. But I just think sometimes the perfect storm, when all those things come together, and it's good for the people who went before us because they provided this foundation going back as far as, yeah, a long ways. But now there are the possibilities. And I think Facebook, you talked about millions of hits. I think there were 12 million hits in a month.
Yeah, it was the metrics were astronomical.
Yeah, I don't even know how that happens, but it was it just allowed people who never would have, because you know, I never would have. 59 years went by, and it wasn't in my plan at all. And so it just is the right time, and that's why it's so important that people in the community have grabbed onto this and they're willing to do it. And the schools are doing a lot as far as, you know, the bullying component, which fits into all this too. And like over at Mountain View, they have this great chart on those out in the back, and there are ways to respond appropriately to what happens. You know, if it's a really big deal, you go to the bottom of the wheel where there's a teacher. But if it's something else that you can handle, it helps you give the kids the words and the ways to express this. And this is important for, it's important for girls, and it's really, really important for guys as well, for boys to learn this, so that we can stop this.
And I think that the role of men in this movement, in this discussion, is something that's certainly evolving as well. So on one hand, speaking from my KDLL hat here, I shouldn't be the one behind this microphone at the moment. Although most of my career has been as a reporter, I'm currently the general manager at KDLL. I always like having a chance to come do interviews and be in the studio, but we have two very professional, experienced, and capable reporters here who are both men. And when Many Voices had your forum, some reporters were invited to come cover the public portion of that. There was a private portion of that meeting afterwards. And to my knowledge, all of the reporters invited were women, including me. The invitation came to me particularly, not to KDLL News. And as a news staff, we talked about, you know, this is something we would love to cover. We would love to have this program in particular that we are having right here today, a Kenai conversation on the Me Too movement locally. They would certainly be in here, but we all felt, you know, well, what's going to be most comfortable for our guests and what makes the most sense in that realm? So here I am today. And even in journalism, where we have pretty clear, you know, well, this is really, guys, this is your job. We've been having some roundabout circular discussions about how do we approach this even within our own industry. And of course, men in general in the culture, I think, are having a lot of thoughts on where do I fit in with this? What do I do with all of this? So not to, of course, make you answer for the whole Me Too movement, but just personally, where do men fit into this? What do they do? How do they get involved? How do they know where not to overstep?
I also want to apologize because after we had invited you, we kind of stepped back and said, we invited you because you were a woman, and we didn't take seriously enough your role at the radio station.
Oh, and this is no, I'm not saying,
well, no, but
dare
no,
you, KDLL, no. In particular. I'm only bringing that up as an example of these discussions and this mental gymnastics are happening in realms where it hasn't necessarily in the past. And I find that particularly interesting. So I have no doubt that if Jay or Shaylin were sitting here right now, everyone would be fine with that. And it would be just as good of a program as if me or some other woman were sitting here. But just to kind of start that discussion, like even in our office, this is something we have been talking about.
Yes. And we did too, because if you had been a man who was the head of the radio station, we might have approached it differently. So we were kind of evaluating our own response. Mm-hmm. But I know they have some response about the how men can be involved in this.
All right, Kristen, we'll start with you.
Sure. So I think learning how to be an effective ally is an important role for men and women in a variety of different groups. We've talked about listening actively to stories. I think that's certainly part of it. And I think in a way the Me Too movement is, it may be a time for men to step back and let women take some leadership and to really have center stage and to be leading that conversation and to be okay with being a listener and not having to be the one with the leadership and the answers to that. But that said, I do think if we're looking at a cultural change where we are evolving into a culture that does not have this prevalence of sexual harassment and sexual violence, and we think that that would be a good thing for everybody, then I think we all have a role to play. And there definitely are groups of men who are getting together just as men to talk about why is it so difficult for me to navigate and what makes me uncomfortable about this and am I really seen as a perpetrator first? And I think those are uncomfortable questions in a parallel way to which being a victim or a survivor of abuse or violence or harassment is also an uncomfortable thing. And I think they are different kinds of discomfort and different spaces to talk about what issues those bring up are appropriate. In terms of the workplace harassment, one thing that men can really actively do is be aware of, are there women in the room when decisions are being made? And if that's not the norm in your workplace or in your civic organization, asking questions about why is that not the case? And are there women who could be present? And how could I engage those women in this conversation? And how can I make sure that there are women involved in discussions about what are our priorities and how are we moving forward with whatever agenda might be there? And so I think there definitely is a role for men in a variety of forms of leadership. And I think the other thing that I would say to men is that it's, I certainly recognize that it can be a scary thing to feel like, oh my gosh, everybody's looking at me as a perpetrator. And as uncomfortable as that may make you as a man, realize that women who have been victimized are frightened for legitimate reasons. And so if you are out on the ski trails and somebody looks at you like, oh my gosh, are you going to attack me? That's not a personal thing about you, but that does say something about that, probably that woman's history. And so recognize that she probably has a legitimate reason to be afraid, and that as a man, you can do a lot to help diffuse that fear. And so you can, if you're running behind somebody or overtaking someone on a bike trail or a ski trail, announce your presence, you know, be friendly, sing a song, make music, do something to not surprise or frighten somebody who is female and out there alone. If you are leaving a meeting and it's dark with somebody who's female who might have a ways to go to their car, you might be sure that you have a flashlight and just say, hey, I have a light. Do you want to walk through the forest, wherever you're going, and sort of be proactive about thinking about, is this person that I'm with maybe having a concern about their personal safety? And are there things that I can do as someone who doesn't live with that personal safety fear all the time? Can I alleviate that fear for that person? So I think there are definitely ways to demonstrate that you are an ally and that you're helping. And I think there are a lot more ways to do that, but those are just a couple of practical things.
Okay, so that was Kristen Mitchell, internal medicine doctor in Soldotna. We also have in the studio today Susan Smalley, a community volunteer, and Dr. Pam Hayes, a clinical psychologist in private practice in Soldotna. You were listening to the Kenai Conversation here on KDLL. I'm Jenny Nyman. We're talking about the role of men in the Me Too movement, in this larger discussion of the Me Too movement. So, Pam, what about you? What do you see as the role of men? Or if you know someone who comes to you and says, I'm not sure what to do with this, how do I respond? How do I be an ally? How do I navigate this? What would your advice be?
Well, I like Kristen's suggestions. And so a couple of suggestions I'd add that are on a broader social level would be join the marches. You know, the marches are open to everybody, and it would feel great to have more men there. Also, write letters that are in support of women and educational programs about sexual harassment and abuse. Those are just a couple of practical ideas.
Okay. Susie, you look like maybe you have more to say on that one.
No.
Okay. What do you hope comes out of this? Anything concrete, like new legislation or new workplace rules, or is it kind of more just awareness to be raised? Maybe a year from now, 5 years from now, where do you hope this goes? What do you hope is different?
Well, I tend to think that for our part, it's a lot of it is from the ground up. And I don't think I think something will happen, and there will probably be things that we can support. You know, the state of Alaska used to have a commission on the status and role of women, basically, which I think that went away during Hickel. But, you know, we tend to focus more on the local level, you know, dropping the rock in the pond. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there will be results. But even if it's just the people who get to share their stories and men who learn and other people who learn to listen, because actually there are a lot of people who are so uncomfortable. And that's where these questions come up that are so hurtful, that people are not intending to be hurtful. Just being able, listening is such a precious thing. And I know that after I shared my story, there were a whole lot of people, there were total strangers. I mean, really people who would just know my name and I wouldn't even know their name, who would share these really moving stories with me. And I just think many voices and the Me Too movement has such potential to help put the community together in a way that's healthy and hopeful and for our children, so our children can learn from this, so that we're not sitting here, you know, another generation sitting here in 30 years with you being interviewed about me too or me too or whatever. We, you know, that we could kind of get to a point where we can see that we've actually made progress.
Hashtag Me Too Revisited.
Yes, yes.
Kristen, what about you? Where do you hope this goes?
Well, on a larger level, I have a teenage daughter, and I really would hope that she and her friends and her generation could grow up without it being the norm for them to experience sexual assault and harassment. And I think that is a heavy lift. That is a big ask. But that really is what I hope this cultural moment will result in. And I think that we get there really by developing a culture of respect for men and women, and an expectation that everybody, male or female, should be able to reach their full potential, and that we don't come at it from expectations that one gender is less entitled to grow and develop and contribute to this world that we all share. So I think respect, equality, and I think we have a lot of work to do about understandings of consent and what that means. And so I think there are programs that are starting in the schools. There's certainly more that can be done. There's a lot more that can be done in the workplace. There are things that can be done legislatively. And I think we all have a role to play in our own home life and work life to really foster a culture of respect.
Okay. Pam, what about you? Where do you hope this goes?
I'd like to see some social changes. And in Alaska in particular, I think it would be good to have educational programs in the schools that teach what consent really is, what abuse is, what harassment is, so that boys and girls learn early on what's okay and what's not. I'd like to see increased resources put to mental health services for people who have been abused. The mental health resources that we have are good. We have a lot of good people here, but we don't have enough services. And I'd also like to see Alaskans put their support behind Office of Children's Services, and for that matter, Adult Protective Services for vulnerable adults. Adults with disabilities, developmental disabilities, have a super high rate of sexual abuse, being sexually abused, very vulnerable population. So I'd like to see more money put into these programs and in support of children and women, and all of these programs ultimately benefit men too.
Okay. How can people make that happen here locally in Kenai Soldotna? What can they do to advance some of these goals that you're mentioning?
Well, they can come to our Green Dot training in March. There will be details later. But and I just want to to, if you can picture this, because it's on radio, you have to do picture this, right? if you look at maps that people put up about bad things that are happening in communities that with the red dots are violence and whatever. Just picture our community, and that would include all our the four homes that we have right here, that we would be putting up a green dot saying that that's not happening here. Only positive things are happening. Respect is happening. We're doing this. And that's like dot by dot as opposed to, you know, step by step was brought up. And that's really the only way we can do it. And working with the schools and supporting the schools and Many Voices, one of the things we support is public education. And to do that as a cooperative thing rather than piling on, because it tends to be like, well, let the schools. But we don't want them to talk about that at the schools. All the time we're saying the schools should do it. But we don't talk about that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So just that working together. And at our last, at our Walk for Unity and Justice, we had about 10 or 12 young women and men under the age of 21.
Oh, wow.
So when you're talking about the young people, because the young people are, they're not going to be our leaders. They need to be. They are our leaders now. If we wait for, you know, they'll be our future. They're our present. And that's really critical that we get that.
Okay. Kristen, how about you? How can people get involved? How could they advance this towards some of the places you'd like to see it go?
So I think people need to take a look at where do they have a possibility for influence. And there are options within schools. The school district does a lot of education. They're very sensitive to public perception and parental perception. And so if parents have a message for the school board that this is important and we really think our children should have this included in their curriculum, that they can make an influence there. I think in the workplace, people could advocate for sexual harassment training if that's appropriate in their workplace. People can advocate for having women on committees and in decision-making bodies and actively look for people who can bring a new perspective to some of the decision making. And I think there's a role in our public officials and in voting in elections and really researching what are people's positions and supporting candidates or running for office to advance an agenda that includes a Me Too voice.
Okay. And Pam, how about you? How can people get involved?
I'll second all that and just add, write letters to your legislators.
There you go. All right. Well, we're getting to the top of the hour here, which means we probably need to be getting down the road toward wrapping up. But we've got a round for final thoughts here. Susan, how about you?
The Many Voices movement, if you want to call it that, has just reminded me that there are a lot of people out there who are really wanting to do things to make the community better. So, you know, we've done environmental things. We've done things related to salmon streams and recycling and gardening and all of these, the kind of the link that puts all these vast divergent kinds of ideas together are the people. And so we want to provide a place where people can come in and say, I want to do something. And then if there's somebody else who wants to help them, we do it. We, you know, we don't have a prescribed thing that we're going to do for this year, but we just encourage people to look at our Many Voices Facebook page, talk to some of the people and find out what's your passion, how can it make the community better, and there's really nothing that we can't do, you know, and to make it more just and to make our community more unified.
Okay. Kristen, how about you? Do you have any final thoughts for us today?
So I started off talking about really breaking a culture of silence, and I just wanted to tip my hat to you, Jenny, and to KDLL and public radio in general for giving voice to this movement and for letting people be part of a broader conversation, really with the emphasis on having an educated public and really a healthier population as we know more about ourselves and about each other.
Well, thank you. And I should probably also put in a little quick asterisk here that you are a brand new board member of KDLL, although that has absolutely nothing to do with your presence on the program today or the fact that we're having this show today. But in full disclosure, thank you, Kristen, for being part of KDLL. And Pam, do you have any final thoughts?
Oh, I'm grateful to be part of a community where people are so caring and looking for ways to support one another.
All right. Well, we will end it on a high note then. This is listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, KenaiSoul.net. This has been the Kenai Conversation. I'm Jenny Nyman. Susan Smalley, thank you for being here today.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure.
And Dr. Krista Mitchell, thank you.
Thank you.
And Dr. Pam Hayes, thank you as well.
Happy to be here.
And thank you all for listening.